Good morning. It's great to be with you. And before I start, I do want to thank all of our banks, our debt investors, and the capital providers that are in the room. Many of you supported us when we began this journey where we were in a similar room in the fall of 2016 when we did our first financing, and we talked about all the things that we intended to do. And I will tell you, all the things that followed could not have been possible with your support, your confidence, and your capital. So thank you for that. I'm going to start just to wrap up the last 2 years of work and try to put that in a nutshell for you and really then begin to focus on the next chapter of Talon and talk about our future. For the last 2 years, we've talked a lot about the issues that needed to be resolved at Talon. As time goes on and starting today, you'll hear us talk about our future, our assets, our aspirations, the sponsor's intentions, how do we monetize this, and the conversation will change quite considerably. But let me start at the beginning and we'll go from there. Many of you will remember this slide. This was a slide we showed at the closing of the LBO. And it reflected the strategy to the starting point of where the company was on December 2016. We made the simple observation at the time that the company's cost structure exceeded commodity gross margin, right? You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that that provided the firm no financial flexibility. Any variability in commodity would eat into that cost structure and make the firm cash flow negative, particularly with a declining commodity outlook. So our first objective was create financial flexibility and remove that elevated risk position. The business, when we took over, had legacy liabilities that were left behind by prior owners. The workforce was bloated in general and lacked motivation, not because of their own doing, but because of the leadership. And then finally, the focus, as Ralph mentioned, was completely external. It was grow at all costs, not looking inside our own house and seeing what was possible. So given that difficult context, we laid out this very simple matrix. And it was to become lean, to build muscle, to variabilize, and to manage risk. Become lean meant selling those non-core assets, stop doing all the things that distracted from the main focus of running the plants. Building muscle was to generate recurring free cash flow. Variabilizing was to create flexibility within a lower cost base. And then managing risk was to ensure the certainty of our cash flow, to preserve the capital of our equity owner, as well as to preserve your capital. So let me give you an update of where we are across each of these dimensions. On the workforce and the management team, when we started, Talon had 6,000 employees and contractors that were running around the place. 2,000 of those employees were in non-core mechanical businesses. We had somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 contractors who had badges, many of whom were being paid with an unclear project, just drawing from the state. We had employees at the plants that had not seen their leadership in years. And so how can a company be high performing with that starting point? The headquarters at our Allentown building was 800 people at headquarters. The first day I stepped into the trading floor in Allentown, that trading floor for a company our size rivaled the trading floor at Goldman Sachs, where I grew up. Simple observation. And I knew the revenues of Goldman Sachs, I knew our revenues, and the two were not equal. Simple observation. So where are we today? That starting point of 6,000 employees, the last 2 years have been a period of very drastic change. We are now at 2,500, which we believe is a stable headcount of the firm. We reduced, and I would say moved very quickly on SG&A, reducing SG&A employees from 800 to 200. Combining now those two offices that we have in Texas and in Allentown. And we moved more prudently at the plants so that we would not cut and endanger the operations and safety of the firm. Importantly, we also hired during that very significant period of transition about 100 great people across Talon. You'll see a number of my colleagues today who are new to the story. And so it's a combination of investment as well as reduction, but we're now in a place where the firm is stable. And lastly, as Ralph mentioned, we also simplify the working relationship with all of our colleagues at the plants and at the union. That also, we are starting to see, has been multiplicative in the competitiveness and in the productivity of the firm. So that's the people side. Let me turn to the next page. Let's talk about cost. In addition to people, we focus very keenly on cost. When we started, in very simple terms, the cost structure was about $1.05 billion or so of O&M and SG&A. North of $450 million of capital and approaching $160 million of SG&A specifically. You can see the results of the efforts over the last 2 years. I'm proud to say that Talon today is $300 million more cash flow generative than it was on December 6th when we started. As Ralph mentioned, we believe this cost structure is durable. It strikes the right balance between cost, flexibility, and investment in the fleet. I'll take you through a number of the investments in the capital that we've deployed across the fleet. That is an unbelievable number that really far exceeded any estimate that we had when Carl and Ralph and I were looking at Talon from the outside in. And so the firm that you have today is both lower cost, higher performing, and that's evidenced by the forced outage rate, which we've monitored closely day after day, quarter after quarter through the course of the last 2 years. In addition to lowering the cost structure, we sold non-core assets, $318 million of aggregate cash proceeds. IEC is the only one that has not closed, and we anticipate that to close in the second quarter. The work around people and cost allowed us to make some very significant moves around the balance sheet, many of which you supported in this room. In April of 2017, we reforecasted the business for the first time. It took us about 4.5 months to have enough conviction of what we were seeing to reforecast and to give you our expectations. Those expectations continue to be exceeded, but they were the basis for the initial set of financings. We knew that we needed to move quickly on the balance sheet because when we started, many of you will remember this maturity wall. And one thing I have learned is that no matter how many maturities we move out, there's always a wall into the future, but we try to continue to make progress. We knew that moving quickly on the balance sheet was the basis to allow the operating turnaround to take hold. And so that's why we threw the football, we threw it lots of times, and we threw it quickly. We were not always very precise, but we improved the field position of the firm and created that operating room to allow the operating turnaround to take place and for the plants to produce as we anticipated that they would produce. In the aggregate, we moved $2 billion of maturities in the short term, moving them 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Our preference in general is to issue long-term debt. There are lots of suggestions about doing little financings, just moving things a year or two. That is not our style. This is a long-term durable asset base. You can see that the efforts here moved this out, not by a year, but by 7, 8 years, and that's a strategy you'll continue to see. Stacy will talk more about the next chapter. Debt was not the only liability we had to deal with. There were 4 very significant liabilities at Talon when we started. 3 of them have been successfully resolved. In the aggregate, we reduced the liabilities of the firm by about $300 million. Many of these liabilities were attributed to us by the rating agencies, even though in some cases they did not show up as debt on our balance sheet. And our colleagues at the agencies, both S&P and Moody's, are with us today as well. And so part of equity value creation in our mind was not just getting the cost structure right, running the assets well, and extending the runway. It was to remove liabilities that over time would erode the equity value of our owner and would increase debt in relation to your position in the capital structure. So we move quickly. In the case of Northeast Gas, we've renamed MachGen. I think all of the letters in MachGen don't exist anymore, so we finally renamed it. This was a business, when we started, was 15 times levered. One of the first things I did when I came to Talon was to write down this asset to debt value with my colleague, Bill Fleener, our chief accounting officer back there, I see. One of the most difficult decisions was, how is it possible that within a year of an acquisition, you can write down the full equity value of this asset? Today, that asset is 7 times levered. Harquahala was taken from losing $25 million to break even. That enabled the sale. We used the proceeds to pay down debt, refinance the capital structure, and put in $25 million in a prepackaged bankruptcy to buy the asset back. Think about that. An asset bought for $1.2 billion, a year later, bought by us for $25 million. We like that risk-reward ratio. This is what Ralph talked about, creativity. My colleague, John Chesser, led this process for us. On mechanicals, we had 11 non-core mechanical services businesses that were the legacy of the PPL utility. These were businesses all over Pennsylvania, Boston, New York, that provided contracting services to stadiums and other locations. They had very significant multi-employer pension plan liabilities. They had an accounting restatement 5 years ago. They had 2,000 employees, and all of that for $25 million of EBITDA. Sounds like a whole lot of calories expended for no benefit. And so we've sold all of them. The last one we sold December 31st of 2018, just right under the line. The sale multiple, just to give you a sense, if you include the liabilities that went with the business, was a sales multiple in excess of 12 times EBITDA. So highly credit accretive on the sale. Ryan will talk about the pension. The pension is now frozen as of January 1st, 2019. That is just one of the many things that were accomplished in the labor negotiation. I'll let Ryan take us through that. And then finally, Montana, it remains a conundrum. We continue to work hard on it, and I'm confident that we will resolve it successfully as we have the other liabilities. This was a plant where the largest employer in the state of Montana, where the prior owner threw away the keys, resigned its operatorship, gave up all negotiating leverage by doing so, and just called it quits. Our first move was to unresign and to take over operatorship again. And during the last 2 years, we've taken this plant from losing $25 million annually to break even, largely through renegotiating the coal contract and then operating the plant seasonally. We're now focused on figuring out the long-term trajectory for Colstrip and for Montana, which is likely to involve the closure of units 1 and 2, which are the oldest units, and an interesting future may exist for units 3 and 4. We continue to work that in many ways with the state, with litigation, with the prior owner, in a variety of other channels, and I anticipate that a year from now, we'll have a meaningful update to share with you. So let me turn to the topic, which I know is of interest to all of you, regarding capital allocation. What we've done here is summarize the amount of capital that we've generated over the last 2 years and how that capital has been invested into Talen and also paid to its stakeholders. The first thing that may surprise you here is that Talen, over that 2-year period, generated almost $1.5 billion of operating cash flow. I think that may come as a surprise. We'll talk about the assets and why we like them, but that was the starting point. When you combine that with the asset sales I discussed, some revolver borrowings during the period, and our starting cash, in the aggregate, we had about $2.2 billion of capital to deploy. This doesn't count all the financings, which I've netted here in one item. Now, how was that capital used? About 45% of that capital went to debt service. About a quarter went to Riverstone in the dividend that we paid of $500 million about a year and a half ago. And about a third was reinvested in the business over time. This is a theme you'll hear from Stacy. Our philosophy will continue to be a balanced allocation of capital, balancing our constituencies, and continuing to invest in the business. Focusing on the debt for just a moment, over that period, we achieved $211 million of net principal reduction. There was $125 million of OID and fees associated with financings that I discussed that were paid to our colleagues in this room. And we paid about $560 million of interest service during that period. Again, we'll continue to talk about this holistically so you can get a sense of where the capital is going in the firm, including in continuing to invest in the longevity of the assets, which we have done over the last 2 years. So let me close the chapter on what we call Talen 2.0 at the outset and give you a sense of what we mean by 3.0. Our management team, when we started, was building. That team now is coalescing. You'll see many of my colleagues in a moment. The workforce, as I discussed, was in reduction mode. We were reshaping the workforce. Today, that workforce is stable, and we're actively recruiting key talent positions for the firm. Work rules, when we started, were highly complex. Those have been highly simplified. You'll hear that from Ryan. The asset base was, we were shrinking before growing, right? We're getting rid of all the stuff that distracted attention from running the plants well, and now we're finally prepared to think about growth. On the regulatory side, we were playing defense. We were establishing our credibility with the regulators. Thanks to Deborah's work and her team, that credibility has been established, and now we're playing offense, as is reflected by the developments in Pennsylvania that we'll discuss later today. On capital structure, we had an imprecise tool. We were extending runway, preserving flexibility, and now you'll see that our focus going forward is to reduce leverage, to balance our cost of capital even further, and to reduce our cost of capital going forward. And then finally, in terms of the EBITDA potential of the firm, over the last year, we'll have generated about $750 million of EBITDA. You'll see that this portfolio has in the past generated $800 to $1 billion of EBITDA on a like asset base, and we believe has the potential to do that. And so as you think about leverage, cash flow, and the cycle, think about the full range of the cycle and not just 1 year individually. So let me spend just a few minutes on the assets before I turn it over to Stacy. Why do we like this asset base? We like it because it has a number of characteristics that when you look at an asset list and a COD date for the assets, it's got characteristics that are not readily apparent to the casual observer. That quality allows us to have tremendous commercial flexibility. It's large, it's diversified by fuel, It's diversified by market. It's diversified by the type of compensation it receives as between energy and capacity. And the bottom line on the portfolio is that it can win under a variety of environments, and it can win in multiple ways. We like diversity. We like having multiple bets across multiple assets. I'll take you through how we think about some of those bets and thesis behind each of our plans. What are some of these traits? The weighted average life of our assets is far in excess of the weighted average life of our capital structure. This is a question some of you had asked both me and Stacy. Susquehanna has the potential to operate well beyond 2060. This requires one more extension of its nuclear operating license. It's a plant that's relatively young, built in the 1980s, with multiple extensions left to continue generating cash flow. The asset base you'll see has a very diverse fuel mix. And what's more important about the fuel mix is not the fuel mix itself, but the ability to switch between fuels in relatively short order. This allows you to win in a variety of commodity environments and volatility like the weather we're seeing today. The portfolio is locationally advantaged across a number of metropolitan areas and also within specific points in ISOs where we see positive basis in many cases in relation to the power that we sell. In the case of ERCOT, our portfolio is interestingly located in the middle of the petrochemical complex in Texas, which will be the future connection point for many pipelines bringing gas from the Permian, which is now trapped. That gas is going to come right into our plants. We've got volatility and the ability to capture it. We have a PJM marketplace that is in capacity contango with all of our megawatts cleared in 2021. We have our market in ERCOT that continues to tighten and is pricing in significant scarcity pricing for the summer. And we have very significant regulatory developments in the state of Pennsylvania. When you look at our assets, think about how they can operate in different environments and not just on what the fuel says on a column or what the COD date says on a column. Consider what the assets can do in different environments and consider the capital that's been invested in them over the last 2 years to allow them to operate. I'm going to go quickly through just a couple of vignettes on our assets. This is like showing pictures of your kids, so I'll try to be timely in my remarks. But let me just give you just a short vignette of how we think about each of our plants. Susquehanna is the industry leader. It did not start there. Brad will take you through how we got there. When we started, this plant had a total cost of generating power of $32 per megawatt hour. At year end 2018, this is a new number we have not shared with you, the plant's cost was $24 per megawatt hour. At that level, it was already top decile of all 100 nuclear plants in the United States. This year, it is on a trajectory to reach $21 per megawatt hour, which will make it the leading or one of the leading plants in the country. Brad will take you through our journey there. And what's important is this is not all about cost. It's about performance. It's about motivation of our people. And it's about an increasing regulatory trajectory, which is equally as impressive as the cost trajectory. So this is not simply a cost story. Susquehanna is an important cash flow generator within our portfolio. Brandon Shores. We call Brandon Shores the basis anchor. Brandon is one of the best coal plants in the entire country. Carl bought it a few years ago for somewhere in the order of $400 million or less. As a result of the Constellation Exelon merger and the regulatory mitigation that needed to be done in connection with that merger when I was at Goldman Sachs. Prior to the purchase, the former utility owners had invested in this plant more than $1 billion in a new scrubber and an environmental control system. I would encourage you to come to Brandon and we'll give you a tour. It's an unbelievable sight to see this machine. So we have the best coal plant in the country located in the heart of Baltimore Harbor, served by barge, which allows us the ability to get coal domestically and internationally from a variety of points. And further, we're located in a constrained area, both for gas and power. Right? So we call it the anchor because Brandon anchors the power system in the Mid-Atlantic. It provides stability from power that's coming from the west in the Marcellus, provides stability from the nuclear power that's coming from Calvert Cliffs from the east, and it provides stability, resiliency in Baltimore Harbor, and it can capture volatility in the times where gas is short in BGE zone. So we love Brandon Shores, and it's a plant that from an environmental perspective we're quite proud of as well. Brunner Island. We call Brunner Island spread option offense. Think about this plant as a spread option as between TETCO M3 natural gas and coal. Brunner, we invested about $200 million to convert this plant to allow it to switch between coal and gas within a 4-hour period. So think about that. When it's scheduled to get cold on the following day, this plant often switches to coal to capture a larger gross margin on coal than it would have on gas during times of significant market volatility. And so one might look at this plant and see a 1960s date and forget that there was a $200 million incremental investment to turn it into a gas plant in 2017. And some of you might also be surprised to see how often this plant runs on gas. You'll see here on the bottom right that the plant runs on gas 75% of the time during the shoulder in Q3 of last year. It also ran on gas 60% of the time in Q2. And in the fourth quarter, it ran on coal 80%. And so this plant gives us tremendous flexibility to maximize gross margin during times of volatility. And we've had some operating issues with Brunner. Many of you are familiar with those from last year. But we continue to focus on investing in this plant and investing in our commercial capabilities to capture it. I won't spend too much time on Montour. Ralph discussed Montour. Montour is essentially a replica of Brunner, but with one important difference. The location of the plant is on top of the Leidy Hub in the middle of the Marcellus Shale. We often see gas prices below a dollar next to our plant. And so we've been in this interesting dance, as Ralph described, with our coal suppliers and say, we have the ability to build the Constitution Pipeline, except it costs us $200 million. We can do it in a year and a half, and it looks like a power plant, not a pipeline. That has been a compelling argument with our rail partners, with our coal partners. As you think about the fleet evolving over time, it is likely that the conversion of Montour to gas is in the cards. It will cost us $200 million to do. About $100 million of that cost is the inside the fence conversion. About $100 million is the pipeline lateral that we build. And we anticipate making that decision by the 2021 timeframe to coalesce with our operating cash flow pickup in 2021. We'll keep you updated on Montour, but at the moment, we like where we are with the new coal and rail contracts at the plant. Martin's Creek. We financed this plant in November, as many of you know, at the asset level. And what we learned during that process was all the misconceptions that people had about this plant. COD of 1975 and 1977. And if you look at the run times on a simple table, you might believe that the plant makes no money because it has a low capacity factor. People forget, though, it is a 1.7 gigawatt plant with five people inside of it, approximately on most shifts, that generates tremendous capacity revenue. And so when you measure this on a cash flow conversion basis, this plant, notwithstanding its age or its runtime, has the highest cash flow conversion cycle of any of our assets. You would probably not deduce that from simply looking at a table in a column with a 1975 COD date. People may also forget that when adjusted for the hours that this plant has run, the plant really is only 13 to 14 years old. And finally, it's on the same site as Lower Mount Bethel, which is a modern low heat rate CCGT with a high capacity factor. And so you've got a capacity cash flow machine sitting next to a high capacity factor gas machine adjacent to a 2 million barrel oil tank that allows us to burn oil during times of market volatility. So you've got capacity, natural gas, oil, and during the course of 17, we spent a lot of time upgrading this plant to allow the delivery of rail and oil by rail to this plant. Before, this plant's oil tanks had to be filled by truck. Well, guess how long it takes to burn one truck of oil at Martin's Creek? 2 minutes. So how many trucks would it take to fill the barrel? It's a lot. It's an ant line, I think, from Martin's Creek probably to San Francisco, where Gary came from. Martin's Creek is a special plant. Let me close on two plants. In ERCOT, we call our three plants the three amigos. I think I can say that given my last name. So why the three amigos? These are two low heat rate CCGT plants, one fast start LMS 1000 or 100 plant, and a peaker. Right, so as you think about the heat rate curve in ERCOT, we're able to capture the full progression of the heat rate curve when market volatility comes. And so what that allows us to do, if we can do it correctly with our commercial initiative, is to maximize the revenue under lots of different environments in the case of ERCOT. We saw the environment strengthening last year. We made the quick decision early in the spring, late in the winter, to restart Barney Davis 1. Made a significant investment in this unit that had been mothballed, and that unit ran last summer and is prepared to run again this summer. So again, a really interesting combination of three assets that can capture scarcity pricing in ERCOT. Now, talk about the market a little bit. What is being built in into the market? The forward price today for the ERCOT summer is $139 per megawatt hour. If you run through the math, that implies about 8 hours of scarcity pricing in ERCOT. I'll leave it to our commercial team to make the judgment of whether that's cheap or expensive, but it is the highest level that we've seen in ERCOT in many years. All of the conditions that existed last year going into the summer continue to exist today. There's fundamental tightness in the market, and whether the market delivers or not, which we certainly can't control, will depend on short-term factors. How windy is it during the course of the summer? How prolonged is the heat? Are there drought conditions leading into the summer? So we can't control those variables, but we're ready to respond, and we're excited about our assets and what they can do in the right environment. And finally, let me just close with Athens and Millennium, which we call the Northeast Gas Play. These were assets that were great, low heat rate, modern, new, great location, but were trapped inside of a terrible capital structure, right? So we've now liberated them from that capital structure, and I'm really excited what Dale Lepsak and John Chesser will do with these assets. The Northeast Gas Play is simple. In the case of Athens, this is a plant between New York City and Albany, about a gigawatt of natural gas, very modern, been financed lots of times. And the play here is, it is a plant that is going to have increasing value as coal retirements take hold in New York. There's already several announced. And as Indian Point ultimately retires in Westchester, the flow of power from Athens to New York City and other places in the state is going to become more important, and it will increase in value. I can't predict what the EBITDA will be, but we believe strongly that this plant will increase in value over time. In the case of Millennium, Millennium is a 300 megawatt plant, much smaller. Today, it is a current income play. It generates very attractive ongoing revenue, EBITDA, and cash flow from capacity revenue. So you've got a plant that's building equity value quickly, you've got another plant that is valuable already, generating very significant capacity revenue, and you've got Dartmouth, the little engine that could, that has the ability to switch to oil in Massachusetts when volatility in days like today come to be. So again, lots of different ways to win, as I mentioned at the outset. This is a portfolio that gives us very significant commercial flexibility where I would encourage you to look under the hood a bit and you will see some of the qualities that we love about our portfolio and the cash flow that it can generate. Thanks very much. And with that, I will turn it over to my partner, Stacey Peterson.